Hello and welcome back to another episode of the HRER podcast, where we delve into the world of HR emergencies and scandals. Don't forget to follow and subscribe to HRER on your favourite podcast platform.
Get ready for scandalous stories, lessons learned, and a generous dose of advice for HR professionals for navigating the HR landscape.
Our goal here is not just to entertain, but also to help you learn from the topics we touch on in order to save your business from its own emergency.
What might it feel like for an employee experiencing menopause symptoms? How does this look in a work capacity? Because I don't know, because I'm a silly man.
Where does this feeling of utter discomfort come from when we talk around things like periods and the menopause?
Well, is there a specific department of the business where PIPs are utilised to manage people out?
Making reasonable adjustments isn't what we'd call positive discrimination or other people having to suffer because someone else is getting what they perceive to be special treatment. It's our legal obligation where someone is suffering with a disability to make reasonable adjustments to level that playing field. Just before we start, protect your business from the risk of tribunal, reduce legal costs, and save yourself from HR headaches with our Heroes software and employment law consultancy services.
I don't know if you know, I have a glue analogy.
I
don't mention it every
other
day.
Never. Can you tell me a bit more about that? I had no idea, mate. I'm so sorry.
But the people who I go to the shop with will buy them Fox's biscuits you've just shown me.
You make that sound like you can't shop unsupervised and like someone has to take you out. You know, like when you go and take like your nan, be like, can I help you with your shopping?
Because I will buy biscuits that I can't eat.
You can't be trusted in the biscuit aisle because of your raging gluten allergy.
You can't leave me alone. But yeah, for context, we have just been speaking about our favourite biscuits.
And my favourites come in substantial plastic trays.
They are substantial.
They are substantial.
Not just any old plastic
tray.
And now
I can't remember the name of them again. The Fox's...
Is that Indulgent or something, is it?
Fox's Fabulous.
There you go.
There you go. Half-coated milk chocolate cookies. They're my favourite.
It's a good question to ask, to be fair. There's a lot. We are a country full of great biscuits.
Yeah, and I suppose listeners or watchers won't know about the Dawn questions. So that was a Dawn question, I think, today, wasn't it? Is what was our favourite biscuit?
I've been asked that a lot, though. And, like, it's been a thing on YouTube where people record, like, and rank their favourite biscuits. It'd be crazy if we could, like, segue into that kind of content, eh?
It would, but we can't. We're here to talk about something else. So what should we talk about today, Ollie?
And on that note...
There's your segue. Done like a podcast pro.
Oh, that was class. We're going to talk about avoiding a discrimination claim due to menopause symptoms.
I mean, I can see how we got there from biscuits.
Oh,
you know,
straight in.
Totally. So, yeah.
Biscuits, menopause symptoms.
Give us the scenario.
Bang. Right. Hi, Alyssa. I have an employee who barely does half their required tasks, has been offered and refused every reasonable adjustment we can think of, and I fear they'll claim discrimination if we try to dismiss them. There's a couple of key facts here about the case. They've been employed less than 2 years. Reasonable adjustments have been offered. Employee doesn't offer any suggestions as to how we can support them and implies that we just have to accept this level of performance due to their age and menopausal symptoms. The next step is to start a PIP, but I would really appreciate advice as to how to approach this and avoid it looking like discrimination, as it isn't. I genuinely want to get them in a better place, but they are resistant to even attempting some aspects of their role. Any advice would be greatly appreciated.
So really, I'd actually say really common scenario, not just around the menopause stuff, but also we see this sort of set of facts around things like illness, but also general capability.
Allergies.
So people, allergies. No, Ollie, you can't have half a workload because you've got a gluten intolerance. people whose perhaps either skills or just general aptitude for how much work they want to take on, you know. So we see it, people who are sick, got disability, where we're looking at things like menopause, but then also general attitude towards work. So it's something we come across a lot. Someone who's either underperforming, not able to reach full capacity at work. And actually in this situation, a really proactive manager or HR manager who wants this situation to improve, they're not just trying to get straight to dismissal. They're not just kind of going, oh my goodness, I can't be doing with someone who's menopausal. It's too much hassle. Help me get them out. This is someone who is genuinely trying to improve the situation, but they're not getting that buy-in from the employee. So this sort of situation is an email that I think, right, this is something we can really get our teeth into. There's stuff to unpick here. There's a plan to put in place. We need to talk about risk and there's lots to do, but I'm working with someone who wants to do the right thing, which from my perspective makes my job a bit more enjoyable rather than making it look like we're appearing to do the right thing to keep the risk down, but then just trying to get somebody out in the background.
Yeah, it's, you've been much more authentic, aren't you?
Yeah.
Like, doing what you say, aren't they?
And lawyers can be authentic.
Believe it or not, yeah.
We can.
Crazy. First question, it's related to reasonable adjustments, which we mentioned a few times in email, to be fair. If an employee refuses all the reasonable adjustments offered, how far is the employer then expected to go before saying, right, that's it?
Well, we'll take a step back first. When we look at reasonable adjustments, we're talking typically about disability. That's the conversation where that often comes out. And this is a situation where we've got someone who is menopausal. Mm-hmm. Now, case law has told us that there are instances where the menopause does meet the definition of being a disability under the Equality Act. So, as hopefully we know by now, under the Equality Act, if you've got a physical or mental condition that has or is likely to last 12 months or more, and it has a substantial impact on your ability to undertake day-to-day activities, including work, then it meets the definition as a disability. It's not a medical test, it's a legal test. Mm-hmm. So when someone with the menopause has gone to tribunal claiming that their symptoms actually were so severe, they were likely to last more than 12 months, they were physical and mental symptoms, and they had a substantial negative impact on their ability to do day-to-day activities and work, the judge found that in that situation, the menopause was a disability for that individual.
Okay.
Now, I've been very careful about the words I use there, because I said in that situation and with that individual. That doesn't mean that the menopause is a disability. But what it does mean, it is capable of being a disability, depending on the severity of it and the facts of that individual case. Mm-hmm. So in this situation, where we're already talking about reasonable adjustments, we're going to assume that the HR manager has come to the conclusion that it's severe enough that we're treating this as a disability. Even if it isn't, if we still treat it as a disability, we're always going to be a bit more on the positive side of the law. Because if we're doing a little bit more than we need to, we never really want to be in the situation where we've gone, actually, we don't think this person's got it that bad. We're not going to treat it as a disability. And then you get to tribunal and you should have done. Whereas if you treat it as a disability, we try and implement reasonable adjustments and we go over and above perhaps what we need to do, we're not going to be criticised.
Yeah.
We're always going to be in a safer position. So from a risk perspective, treating it as though it is a disability and proceeding on that basis is always going to be lower risk. So that's why we're having this conversation about reasonable adjustments. If we were going to take the position that this wasn't a disability, we're still potentially at risk of discrimination, but a different type. So only biological adult females or women can suffer with the menopause. Men cannot have the menopause, despite how that word is made up. I do think it's hilarious that menopause is uses the word men and it only affects women. Perhaps it's got something about how irritating men could be. I don't know.
Yeah,
who knows?
Some men. Yeah. Some.
Yeah, maybe. And then I think there was some commentary about the manopause. So there's a concept that men go through something and they're calling it the manopause.
I don't know.
By your reaction, I'm guessing that you're not expecting to experience it anytime soon.
I'm all good.
But fundamentally, only women can experience the menopause. Biological women, people who are born and become adult human females, can suffer with the menopause. Which means that if you treat someone badly or in a negative way because of the menopause, you can only treat women badly, which means it's potentially sex discrimination because you are never going to treat a man poorly because of the menopause.
Not yet.
Not yet.
It might happen, mate.
I suppose if we were going to do some mental gymnastics, right, if you have someone who is female, but they have transitioned and they haven't transitioned, but they're identifying as male, but they're still biologically female and thus experiencing the menopause and you treat them poorly because of the menopause, arguably, it's still sex discrimination because under the Supreme Court ruling, when we're talking about sex discrimination, we are talking about biological sex. There you go.
Nice.
There's some really good, solid law for you to get your brain around. Fundamentally, it could potentially be sex discrimination. No, it is sex discrimination to treat someone badly because of the menopause because only biological women can suffer with it.
But if this person identifies as a male, could you as HR go, men don't get it, and like play the other side?
No, because if the person's a biological female and in line with the Supreme Court ruling...
Is there anything to do with, like, what if the passport says otherwise? Because that was part of the Supreme Court thing.
But the no, so the what the ruling, and we have a little mini micro course on this, which will tell you exactly what a woman is, Ollie. Under the Supreme Court ruling, anyway. When we talk about the definition of sex, that is what the Supreme Court looked at. They didn't look at the definition of a woman. Okay. What they said was, when we use the words sex discrimination as lifted from the Equality Act, we are talking about biological sex. Mm-hmm. So if you say, I have suffered sex discrimination on the basis that I'm a woman, it's sex discrimination based on your biological sex.
So you have to have been born a woman.
It doesn't mean that you don't have protection if you identify as something else. So in your example where we've got someone who is a biological woman but identifies as a male and is suffering with the menopause, if they're treated badly because of the menopause, it's sex discrimination on the basis that they're a biological woman.
Crazy. You can have it both ways.
Yeah. If that person then is also treated badly because of how they identify, they're also protected under gender identity. So it could be a double whammy in terms of discrimination.
Give over with all that.
I mean, we just, personally, you know what? We come back to my fundamental point, which is treat everybody nicely. Like, why can't we all just be nice to each other? Oh. And then we can avoid all this from happening in the first place. I would also be out of a job. So, you know, a bit of poor behaviour.
Here and there, just
here
sprinkle
and there
it in.
Is you know, we tolerate it, I suppose, because it keeps me in work. But that's where we're coming from with this. So potentially disability discrimination if the symptoms are severe enough, but my suggestion is always treat it as if it is, so we're on the right side of things. Mm-hmm. But also be mindful that there could also be a latent claim around sex discrimination if we've got someone who's being treated poorly who has the menopause. So there's two potential risk factors here when we're talking about the menopause, potentially three, because only typically older women suffer
age,
with it. So we've got age discrimination.
Yeah.
So it's a real risk area, and one where there's a lot more education needed. And when I designed, and this isn't a plug, but it is, I'm kind of patting myself on the back. When I wrote our menopause training course, one of the things that really bothered me was how difficult people find to talk about the menopause. Like, some men struggle to say the word, not because it's a difficult word to pronounce, but for some reason it makes them feel deeply uncomfortable.
I had a bit of it then.
Yeah. And in the same way that teenage boys, if they have to talk about periods, they just, you can see them almost visibly struggle to say the words because there is this stigma around the whole thing. So I did some research. See, yeah, you're doing, you're giggling, you're laughing because you do.
I can empathize.
And it is. It's where does this feeling of utter discomfort come from when we talk around things like periods and the menopause? I'm going to keep saying those words and just see how uncomfortable I can make you feel.
I'll look anywhere but at you, mate.
So I did some research about where, like, the discomfort comes from and why it's there. And we actually talk, like, there's actually a bit about it in the menopause training about the attitude that little boys have at school and teenagers have and then grown men have and how this kind of just grows through adulthood.
Crazy.
Yeah, you're like, please don't say those words again. Please don't say it again. Please don't make me say it.
You said little boys and I just like felt myself shrink. I'm still one of them. But you are right.
Yeah.
You are right. Yeah. Like, the P word at school was crazy. So a lot of the P word, it was just sniggers all around.
Periods, Ollie. Periods. It's a biological function.
Even if someone said it out of context, like, oh, what have we got? First period. Do you know what I mean?
But then it does. If you think about in a very, very male-centric workforce, so take somewhere where we may have some old-fashioned attitudes, perhaps people from older generations who very, very deeply feel that discomfort when they're talking about these topics. Not because they find anything disgusting, just because they've been told, probably as children, by their mothers not to talk about it.
Or
their fathers or whatever, told it's nothing to do with them. So take, I don't know, manufacturing or something like that, where you've got physical jobs going on.
Blue-collar boys.
Yeah. And you put a woman in the mix with the menopause. How are they going to respond when she either needs reasonable adjustments or she's struggling at work or she's having a hot flush or she needs to talk about this with someone, to tell somebody about the struggle that she's having? You put her in a room with somebody who really doesn't want to talk about this because it's making them uncomfortable. They're going to rush that conversation. They're going to probably stumble over their words. They're going to get out of there as quickly as they can and hope it never happens again.
Right.
And you're going reasonable.
Yeah, yes. You're right. Yeah. I was thinking, like, if they stay in the room at all, you know what I mean?
But what's that work environment like for that woman?
There's
who
no one
feels
to turn
that
to, is there?
There's no one to turn to, and there's no one who's actually understanding what it is that she is going through and why. And what you've probably got is lots of attitudes of, well, every woman's gone through it, so why can't she just cope with it? Why can't she just shut up and get on with her job? And again, that's what we touch on in this training, is actually understanding how significant the impact of these symptoms is. And actually, you know, shut up and put up isn't what people should be doing anymore. And certainly what we also at the other end of the scale shouldn't be saying is, well, can't she just take HRT? Like, how you medicate or how you treat yourselves or how you manage symptoms is entirely someone's individual choice.
Everyone's reaction as well to these things is entirely individual. Yeah. Not everyone's affected the same, are they?
Yeah.
Like, it's a walk-in park for, well, I imagine it's a walk-in park for some women. Yeah. Some women it's a bit more uncomfortable, eh?
Yeah.
Look at me talking about
it. Being all mature and God engaging in the conversation. I think we should do a menopause one every three.
I think we'll move on to the next question, personally.
Every three episodes.
Not to change the subject, but is a pip the right call here? It is genuinely the next question.
So we'll go back to the core scenario here, which is where HR is trying to do the right thing. They are having these conversations. They're trying to implement reasonable adjustments. An employee is not engaging. Then yes, a pip is going to be potentially the right step. So a PIP doesn't necessarily need to be something negative. It's a performance improvement plan. So all we're doing is setting out in a clear, structured, and sensible way what we want this employee to achieve, what the issues are, what support we can give them to get there, how it's going to be measured, and when they're going to be judged, and what the next steps could be. Mm-hmm. So we're giving them essentially a ladder for improvement. If they fail the PIP, then yes, potentially we could be looking at a capability-related dismissal. But what we're hoping is that we can take someone who might be performing at 3 out of 10 and through the course of the PIP get them from 3 to maybe 5 and then 5 to maybe 6 and then 6 to maybe, right, let's start to look at 8 out of 10. We're not expecting them to get from 3 to 10 immediately.
Slowly but surely.
It's the point of the PIP is to steadily, with support and with clear and achievable goals, move someone up that performance ladder.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can't, if they continue to stay at that 3, or they go 3 to 4 and back to 3, or they get worse, that there are consequences for that, which could be a capability dismissal. So a PIP isn't a threat, a PIP isn't a punishment, and judges will spot the difference between a PIP that's designed to manage someone out of a business and a PIP that's designed to genuinely try and improve someone's performance. And if it's not successful, that they're then dismissed.
You might have kind of answered it for me there, but I've got a question, not a trick question either. This is like it's not a quiz show, but is there a specific department of a business where PIPs are utilised to manage people out? I've got an answer in my head here. From my
sales, often. Typically they are used as like a stick to beat people with. Yeah. Often it's a threat. Do this or you'll be on a PIP.
Mm-hmm. It often contains, in my experience, unrealistic targets.
Yeah. And that's where they will get picked apart by lawyers, is if they are unrealistic, unfair, too quick, too aggressive, then it's an unfair process.
Oh.
If it's something that's totally unachievable, slapping, you know, PIP on the top of it isn't going to make it fair. It's got to be, yes, you can have stretch goals and stretch targets that you're expecting people to push a little. But in that example that I gave, we're expecting someone to go from a 3 to a 10. In a week.
Unrealistic.
It's not going to happen.
No.
If someone is starting to show the grassroots of improvement and we are seeing some movement in a positive direction, we should be giving that person time, space, chance and support to continue that improvement.
Mm-hmm.
If it's unrealistically slow and it's going to start causing us operational issues, it's causing unreasonable burdens on other people, you know, the training isn't taking effect quick enough, potentially we could then still start to look at, you know, removal. But if we are seeing improvement, if we are seeing that someone has potential, we should be working with that. We shouldn't be using it as, well, you didn't do it fast enough, out you go.
Mm-hmm. God, where were you at my last job?
This is the question that every employer needs to be asking, really.
I wish I knew that. Anyway, I digress. I already know this is related to the Employee Rights Bill.
Okay.
What I'm about to ask.
Just to put
that in there, just to show signs of progress. The employee has less than 2 years' service. How mm-hmm. does that affect the legal risk or protection against discrimination claims? I'm right, aren't I?
Potentially. Oh, yes. Yes. Right. No. Don't be disheartened. If discrimination wasn't on the table, highly relevant, because less than 2 years, risk is relatively low. We're going to probably skip through things relatively quickly. However, discrimination is very much front and central here. And it's a discussion that I'll often remind managers and HR managers of when they say, oh, but they've been here less than 2 years. In this situation where there's potentially three different types of discrimination in play, that is going to be the more valuable claim. Unfair dismissal, yeah, when we're talking about money. So unfair dismissal is limited to the equivalent of a redundancy payment and up to a year's losses after tax, after the notice has been paid, and if that person can't find work within the year. The average unfair dismissal award generally sits between $5,000 and $7,000. We're not necessarily mega bucks. Often, your legal fees can be more than what you end up paying out on an unfair dismissal claim. For someone who's a kind of average earner, if we're talking about someone in six figures, it's different. Mm-hmm. Or very long service. If you've had someone there 20 years, their basic award, that equivalent of the redundancy, is going to be quite high. On discrimination, if we've got someone who has suffered, you know, a campaign of abuse, that the impact on them has been so severe that they've ended up having to see their doctor, they're getting mental health support, that they don't think they're going to be able to work for several months or even years, you could be looking at payouts of hundreds of thousands of pounds.
It's true.
So yeah. I'd be saying to the question of, well, they've been here less than 2 years, I'd be saying, well, so what? What's your point? The bigger claim here is discrimination, and you get that from
day one.
Doesn't matter.
Okay.
You have protection from discrimination, actually, from before you even start employment. Because if during the recruitment process you're discriminated against, you've potentially got a claim.
That could be a full-time job.
What, bring in discrimination claims? Yeah, we're called employment lawyers.
Apply for jobs. Get discriminated against.
Yeah, get paid. And I have seen, I know of someone who has done that. Not like a friend or anything, but when I was in practice as a lawyer, I came across someone who very much did that, would go from basically interview to interview and knew how to manipulate situations to get so far in a process before revealing something, whether that something was true or not.
Quite smart, you know.
And did quite well. And even if it was £1,000 here, £5,000 there, you know, you do it every two or three months.
It's a full-time job.
It's, yeah.
I'm not, obviously not going to do it, but it's quite smart.
Manipulative, dishonest, abusive process. You know, there's
lots of ethical
reasons why we wouldn't
ethical,
want to be doing
yeah.
that, you know.
There is ethical, but yeah. I don't know, if you've got nothing else going for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I think even if I was...
Oh, I'd never do it.
I don't think I would.
But I just think it's interesting.
Yeah. Well, the last time I made an ethical judgment, where I'd recently just come back from leave and went to Iceland, my husband ate something questionable and I was like, I gave it a sniff. I was like, it smells like bad ethics. I can't eat that.
Are you at liberty to say what it was?
Oh, I don't know. I think we get trolled for talking about employment law. I probably get my house burnt down if I say what he ate.
Right, we'll park that. Let's go on to the employee questions. There's only two of these. What might it feel like for an employee experiencing menopause symptoms? How does this look in a work capacity? Because I don't know, because I'm a silly man.
Okay, so what do you think? What do you think the menopause looks like? Don't say a 45-year-old woman who's sweaty. Tell me, what do you think the symptoms are that someone who's in the menopause suffers from?
I wasn't going to say that, but the only... Like,
you weren't, but you were.
Yeah, I was going to say it a different way. The only thing I've heard from women going through it is, oh, I'm having a hot do.
Okay.
Like a hot flush.
Yeah.
I understand it's hormonal changes, but what them hormonal changes are, don't know, mate.
So the way we describe it in the training and why it's different for men... So men do go through hormone changes, but there's a slow decline over many, many years.
Yes.
So you don't really notice it happening to you. Whereas for women, they describe it like you've gone up a roller coaster and then bang.
It's sudden.
Yeah. It's
heck.
And hormones play a huge part in everyone's biology, but it's from everything from things like how your brain works. So you can experience brain fog, forgetfulness. Temperature regulation, so the hot flushes, joint aches and pains. It can affect your mental health, so it can cause some people to essentially suffer from depression. Mm-hmm. Almost every single function in the body is impacted by that hormone change, and for some women it is severe, so they can't sleep. So it regulates ability to sleep, switch off, rest. But if you combine that with someone who is feeling low, can't sleep, is having hot flushes, joints, aches and pains, and is getting brain fog and is forgetful, how is that person even leaving the house?
If you could have finished that at lack of sleep.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'd have gone like, no sleep, and that's enough for me to like sort of.
But for some
down.
People, that can be happening all at once.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Crazy.
So the impact is enormous, and it's where this whole put up and shut up argument really annoys me, is it assumes that it happens to everyone in the same way. Mm-mm. And it doesn't. Some people have very few symptoms. It's very light. Some people absolutely feel like they've been run over by a bus and then reversed back over again. And society has changed from the days when one income was enough. Husband would go out for work and a woman would run the house. These days, women are not only sometimes expected to be a breadwinner, they're also still running the house and a million extracurriculars for a child. They're holding down very, very demanding and intellectually demanding positions with a huge amount of pressure, often with very busy, nightmarish commutes. Life now is very different to what it was to when we were single-income households. And you do all of that with the impact of the menopause as well. No wonder you have people who just go, I cannot hack this anymore. And then either end up leaving work or going off on long-term sick.
I just want to lay down all the time, mate.
Yeah.
I do anyway, but like with that on it, do you know what I mean? That's a lot. Sort of last question as an employee then, how can I make sure that performance standards are applied fairly with sort of menopausal stuff in tow?
So the fairness thing, and in this situation is one of the more positive ones where we've got employer who really is trying to do the right thing. They are trying to make those adjustments. They're trying to make those changes. Mm-hmm. Making reasonable adjustments isn't what we'd call positive discrimination or other people having to suffer because someone else is getting what they perceive to be special treatment. It's our legal obligation where someone is suffering with a disability to make reasonable adjustments to level that playing field. If, however, you're in a situation where you have got someone where reasonable adjustments either won't make a difference, and we've been through that process, we've considered them, we've talked about them, consulted with the employee, or they are asking for something that is not reasonable for the business. So it could be they want to reduce their workload to an unreasonable level and you don't have the resources to make it up somewhere else. We don't have the money to employ somebody else. It's going to put an unreasonable amount of work on another employee. And we can justify why that is not reasonable for us. It might be reasonable for another business. It might be reasonable for a bigger business that has temps left, right, and center, or really large teams with lots of capacity. That might be reasonable. But for your business, if it's not reasonable, then that is not considered to be a reasonable adjustment under the law, and it's not something you necessarily have to do.
Okay.
But to get to that point, you have to make sure you've documented those discussions, you can evidence why it's not reasonable for your business and why it's potentially going to cause operational harm, and that you've exhausted all other options before we are refusing, essentially. Because you do sometimes get that. Someone says, well, I know that this will fix it for me. And the example I often give at a very basic level, for example, is you're a business that operates on the third floor of a building with stairs. An employee has a horrendous accident and ends up in a wheelchair. And they come in and say, I can't get up the stairs. I either need a chairlift putting in or a lift. And you don't own the building and the landlord won't do it.
You can't
knock the building down and we can't move the business. So whilst it's unfair and it's very sad in that situation, there may not be a reasonable adjustment that means that that employee can continue to work, and that would be a capability dismissal, which is because of your health, you're no longer capable of performing your role. Of course, these days, because that's a bit of an old-fashioned example, can the employee work from home? Can they work remotely? Mm-hmm. Can they still do their duties from somewhere else? Do they need to come into the office? Can we do off-site days so that then, you know, every now and again, they feel like they are getting that employee contact? So we've got to think creatively. We can't just shut the door and go, that's impossible. We've got to go through that process of consulting with the employee, trying to be creative, and then evidencing the decisions that we make.
Closing question. What emergency measures can prevent this in future? We've got the training thing, haven't we?
Train
the staff. I don't.
I'm going to make you sit through it. I'm going to make you do it.
Do you know what? I reckon I'll do better than you think. I'm not going to air it on air, believe it or not, but I've got a similar experience.
And then I reckon you have to have a discussion about it afterwards, using the words.
God alive. What do you call that? Is it like a name for it, isn't there?
Like a workshop.
Yeah, something like that. I was going to call it an experiment, but
immersive therapy or desensitization.
Yeah.
We're just going to make you say the words over and over and over and over until it's no longer an issue.
It's immersive therapy, exactly.
So do the training. Get all your staff on the training, not just HR managers, not just your managers. You want all your employees to know what it is that's causing women an issue, what it is that they're facing. Have that empathy, have that education, and understand why things have to be done in a certain way. And then if there are issues, we err on the side of caution, treat it as a disability, implement reasonable adjustments. Don't forget there's other flags for discrimination. We've got sex discrimination as well as age discrimination. And if we're implementing PIPs, make sure that they are reasonable, that they're evidence-backed, and they're also in line with our capability policies.
It's almost like you meant to say that, because we do PIPs and performance stuff in the software.
I mean, that sounded rehearsed. I'd say that was good.
That was an assist.
Yeah.
That was a really good assist. But yeah, we have got we've got PIPs built in, QMs, or the qualitative and quantitative metrics, haven't we?
Yeah, in the software, yeah.
Which I renamed because I struggled to say them.
Did you? Is that why they've changed? Because you can't say them?
I struggled to... Jim was
qualitative
all
right with it. And
quantitative. I was adding like Worcester sauce, which is just...
Quantitative.
Yeah, I was adding things to it and it's just not right. But yeah, we do them in software.
And with the e-learning integration as well, the certificates will be in there. So you'll know who's done the menopause training and who hasn't.
Because
it all links nicely together now.
Really pleased with that.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Mm. Look at that. We did like a legal session. We talked about loads of law. I made you grossly uncomfortable and we plugged the software and the e-learning.
That is literally the checklist that was on the plan of this podcast. Yes, well done. thanks for time, everybody. Like, comment, subscribe. Cheers.
Until next time, we're your hosts signing off from HRER. Take care of your HR and may your workplace be disaster-free. Before we go, a big thank you to you for tuning in and don't forget to subscribe. If you have your own ER stories or suggestions for future episodes, reach out to us at Heroes or on social media or even hrer@heroes.co.uk. As we navigate the maze of workplace blunders, remember that no organisation is perfect. But by sharing these stories, we can all work towards creating healthier, happier and more productive workplaces.